bless you in the land where you are entering to possess it. But if your heart turns away and you will not obey, but are drawn away and worship other gods and serve them, I declare to you today that you shall surely perish. You shall not prolong your days in the land where you are crossing the Jordan to enter and possess it. And I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have set before you life and death, the blessing and the curse. So choose life in order that you may live, you and your descendants, by loving the Lord your God, by obeying his voice, and by holding fast to him. For this is your life and the length of your days, that you may live in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give them. That is another extension of the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Those two trees. That tree of the knowledge of good and evil is alive and well in the church and in the world today. It is alive and in some places prospers. I'll get a little personal here, get in your business a little bit. So if you've ever made a decision based on the pros and cons, you just made a decision based on the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And Yahweh says that will bring death. Yahweh intends for us to live by means of his Father and not by means of our intellect or our ability to decide what's good or bad. You know, most of the time when we do pros and cons, it's all about us. We're putting down what's good for us and what would be bad for us. And if Yeshua had made the decision about the cross on the pros and cons, come on. But Yeshua is the pattern. He said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And so he is the pattern. He's the way. And he came to show us how to live as a man on this earth in this fallen world. And he said, I'm going to not just show you, I'm going to live it. And then he tells his disciples afterward, you follow me. You know, deny yourself, pick up your cross, and follow me. That's what Yeshua did. That's how he lived. And he himself said more than once that I only do what I see my Father do, and I only say what I hear him saying. He didn't one time say, oh, I'd weighed out the good and the bad and decided what I'm going to do today. Not once. And had anybody looked at the cross, anybody that loved Yeshua, they would have never called that good. But the Father called that good. You see why that tree is dangerous? There's good. I was telling the story in Heston where the Lord said, anything and everything that proceeds from heaven is good. So the cross proceeded from heaven. That made it good. We wouldn't call it good. I'm sure Mary and the apostles didn't think of it as good at the time. But boy, look at the fruit of it. Look at the good it produced. And there's danger for us in making decisions based on the pros and cons because we don't know the future. And we don't know what this decision's going to mean down the road. But Yahweh does. I was at a railroad track one time. There was a train going by, and this was the longest train in the history of mankind. I was in a hurry, and it went on and on and on and on, and I am bored out of my mind and ready to go. And all of a sudden, the Lord speaks to me, and he says, you know, this is like your life, your earth life. I said, hmm? He said, yeah. He said, you only see it one car at a time. Maybe two. He said, but I see your life from above, the engine and the caboose all at the same time. I see everything. and I orchestrate your life accordingly, where you only have the knowledge of what you see right in front of you at the moment. That's why it's so important for us to trust him, because we don't know. We can't see the whole thing. And I never as a child would have ever dreamed that I'd be doing what I do today. Never would I have ever, not even half of what he's had me do and partner. So I think I'm done with that. Now I think we'll turn to page 5 in our little booklet here, and we'll see how far we get. So there are two neuroscientists that I have gleaned most of my brain science and most of the information on the imagination from. If you're interested, they're both believers. One is name is Dr. Aiko, A-I-K-O, Horman, H-O-R-M-A-N-N. I think it's two N's. And then also the second would be Dr. Arlene Taylor. They're both believers. Now, Dr. Aiko spent 20 plus years studying, as a Christian, studying the imagination. And she's discovered, it's fascinating what all she's discovered. So some of this came from her stuff. I want to say this, that just because you create a safe place in your mind, and just because you consecrate, you set your imagination apart for Yahweh, that doesn't mean that your own natural mind can't project into it. It can. That's why you use discernment. And if ever anything is contrary to Scripture, you trash it right away. You don't even, and then find out why you grab that deception, you know. But you can start an encounter, and it's just the natural mind in the start, right? But you invite Yeshua to come into it, or the Father, or the Holy Spirit, or all three. And when they do, it changes everything, right? So, for example, I could decide, okay, Lord, I want to encounter you. I mean, I don't do that anymore because I'm just there. I just go. But in the beginning, I would, Lord, I want to encounter you. Would you come and meet with me under the apple tree? And I would see in my mind the apple tree, the white picket fence, and I'd see myself running across the pasture. And by the time I'd reach that gate, the Lord would be there. He did that. I didn't put him there. I didn't do that. And from that point on, he took over. He would speak to me. He wouldn't. He'd invite me to sit down. He'd give me an apple. Let's go for a walk on the stream, at the stream. Let's, you know, he'd do all kinds of different things. Or I want to talk to you about when you were 7 or da, 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 right? But the moment that the Lord interacts with you or steps into that imagination becomes supernatural. It's no longer natural. That's what we're after. His presence changes everything. If I mean, this is just a plain old ordinary marker, but I'm telling you, if Yeshua were to take this in his hand right now, it would no longer be an ordinary plain marker. And just the same is true for us. We give our lives to him. And if we surrender our lives to him and he possesses, he accepts us, we're no longer the same. We become a new creation. And Scripture calls it regeneration. That word is regenesis. It means to do Genesis again. When you surrendered your life to the Lord, he did Genesis again in you. And it's an ongoing process. It's a journey. It isn't a once and done. you are on a journey of you were saved, you are saved, and you're being saved. And you're growing in like a child. We come into the kingdom like little children, but we're to grow and mature and become sons and daughters and eventually the bride or the one new man. And remember that that one new man is not Jew and Gentile only becoming one. It's Jew and Gentile being grafted into the one new man, Christ himself. He's the one new man, and we become grafted into him. Israel's not the vine. I've heard that taught. Yeshua is the vine, and we are grafted in to Yeshua, and so are the Jews. So that's another, let's not go there. Okay. So the dictionary defines the word imagination as the creative power of the mind and its capacity to create and form mental images and new ideas by combining present and previous experiences. So this next section is from Dr. Iko Horman, Facts About Your Imagination. After her 20-plus years of studying the imagination, and she studied the imagination in Christians, believers, and unbelievers. I love that. It's fascinating. If you're a researcher like I am, scientifically, it's fascinating. But if you're not, then just do these bullet points. You're good. So she discovered that your imagination is working all the time, whether or not you're aware of it. Your imagination, without discipline, tends to be negative or evil. Page 5. Can you believe that? Yeah, I can. Without your imagination being disciplined and consecrated, it tends to be negative or evil. Whatever controls your imagination can and will control you. We are image-forming beings. Every thought is first an image. We assign words to those images, which becomes our thoughts. Everything we experience produces images in our minds. You cannot think without using your imagination. It just happens so fast you're not aware of it. For example, when we teach a baby how to talk, what do? We hold up a ball and we say, ball, 50 times, ball. And finally it clicks and they go, oh, ball, when they see that image. But that image is imprinted in their brain and the word is assigned to that image. And that's how we get thoughts. So you're actually thinking in images. And and it's powerful. I'm going to do a little exercise here. In just a second, we'll do that. So how your imagination interprets and understands your experiences will be the determining factor that molds your personality and frames your character. See how important your imagination is? Nobody ever taught me this. Man, I would have raised my babies differently. What you think about your life is more real to your brain than the actual facts about your life. In other words, your imagination creates your reality. Never underestimate the power of your imagination. 2 Corinthians 10:5, Paul tells us to take every thought captive. Why? Because to ignore your thoughts and imaginations gives them permission to grow and multiply. When you imagine something that is ungodly, it is important to stop and say, in the name of Yeshua and by the power of his blood, I cancel this image and break the power of it over my life. Then imagine yourself placing a big red X over that thing. Because your brain likes to see images. And then imagine something that's holy instead of the unholy thing. Your imagination doesn't care what you plant in it. It is neutral. All it knows is to grow and multiply whatever images you allow in it. It is hardwired to do that. And again, this is mostly from Dr. Iko Horman, who studied the imagination for so many years. Let's do an example of the power of the imagination and the way you think. Your brain is hardwired to think. Let me rephrase that. Your thinking positive statements requires one step for your brain. But if somebody gives you a negative statement, do not eat the cookies. It takes your brain two steps to process that. And before the age of four, you can't. Around four, you can begin to start processing the do not. So when I told my little ones at 2 years old, do not, and they did, I was like, they didn't get the do not. So here, let's do an example of this. I want you to imagine eating an ice cream cone. Picture it, taste it, pick your flavor, enjoy it. Even those of you who are not eating sugar like me. Yeah, no calories. So, yeah, anybody have trouble picturing that? Anybody have trouble? Okay. Well, for different reasons. Okay, now I would like you to imagine this sentence. Do not eat an ice cream cone. It's harder, isn't it? Do not eat an ice cream cone. Now let's bring it home. Your brain doesn't process not very well, the negative statements. It has to do a logical journey to be able to process the do not. But do eat an ice cream as easy as everything, right? All right, listen to this. Don't listen to this. No. Do not, or I will not look at pornography. Right? I just plead the blood of Yeshua over every mind here now and ask you to cleanse our minds in Yeshua's name. Now, instead of that statement, I will only look at holy, clean, pure things. Yeah. It's important how we think. It's important that we take every thought captive under the obedience of Christ. Hey, do we have a baby? I see y'all here. Yeah, not yet? Cassandra? No, okay. I just thought maybe the baby had come and y'all are here. This is Grandma and Auntie. Well, yeah. We're all checking our phones and looking. Okay, back to your brain. It's really, really important how we speak. And to do your very best not to communicate with, do not even when you're talking to yourself, I will not go get a Big Mac and whatever. I will not, no, that's going to just make you want it because your brain pictures it. First thing you do is you picture the thing you say you're not going to do. And your brain is hardwired to do, to grow and multiply. Whatever you put in it, and you accept it, your brain takes that as permission to grow and multiply that thought. And so I remember one morning after I learned this, I got up and I went in the kitchen and one of my girls had left the big box of Cheerios open, top and everything, opened the cabinet, bumped that box, and it was up on the top, and it came falling down, and I had a million Cheerios everywhere. And right before that, I had stumped my toe twice. So that was the third thing, and I went, oh, I'm having a bad day. And I went, oh, stop, brain, no, don't listen to me. I am not having a bad day. I'm having a great day. This is going to be the best day I've had all week, all month. Oh, my. Because I was learning. Because your brain will hear you say, I'm having a bad day. And your brain kicks into gear to make sure you have a bad day. Yes, Alan. Right. We're in a new covenant. Isn't he a yes and amen God? And let me say this about that, both of that, because I can see both in the New Testament. I can see Yeshua repeated the Ten Commandments. He repeated 9 of the 10. But think about it. He said, Matthew 22:37, he said, they asked him, what's the first and greatest commandment? He said, love the Lord your God. That's positive, not do. And love your neighbor. Love your neighbors. You love yourself. That's all the positive ones. But what if he's, because it's not that you don't ever say do not. It's that it's harder for your brain to accept it and process it. We got to stop and think about this. The Ten Commandments, you better stop and think about it, what he's saying. Because it takes your brain to stop and think about it. But I wonder if it would have made a difference. No, because he wouldn't have done it that way. He knew what he's doing. So that was good. I love things that make you think. Oh. All right. So I have learned that when my brain were to take every thought captive under the obedience of Christ, that means those thoughts are images, whether you see them or not, your brain's seeing them. That means when I have a thought that's negative or contrary to truth or that I don't want in my life, right? I did this consciously. Now it's become like more like breathing. But I would stop and out loud, I'd say to myself, if it was appropriate to say it out loud, I would tell myself, brain, nope. I renounce that thought. I take it captive now under the obedience of Christ. I apply the blood of Yeshua to that thought, and I command it to leave my life. And I place a big red blood of Yeshua over that image that thought created, and call it null and void because of the blood of Yeshua. And then I take the time to form a mental image of something that's contrary, the opposite, that's holy, and I focus on that. And I'm telling you, it's powerful to take every thought captive. It's powerful to pay attention. There's a phrase I say all the time, pay attention to what you're paying attention to. Because most of us aren't paying attention to what we're letting run around in our heads. Right? Unless it finally gets us upset. And then we go, oh, right. So try that. It works. Your thoughts drive your actions. Your actions form your habits. And habits help shape your character and personality. So these thoughts, it's a big deal what you're letting your brain think. It's a big, big deal. I don't think Satan has stolen our imaginations. I believe we've given it to him. And sometimes it's just because of not doing anything. Just remaining neutral, we let him in. And he doesn't miss an opportunity, right? Proverbs 23:7 says, for as a man thinks within himself, so he is. That word thinks in Hebrew, I can't speak Hebrew, I can't speak Greek. I do good to speak English mostly. Well, I used to speak Southern drawl, but I kind of lost that. I was in London one time preaching in a church, and I made that statement that I don't speak Hebrew or Greek, and then and somebody in the audience said, and you don't speak English either. So I don't speak English, I speak American. Anyway, the word thinks is the Hebrew word shahar, however you pronounce it. And it's only found in this verse. And it means to open and close, to act as a gatekeeper, to reason, to estimate, and to think. So this verse is saying you are and will be what you imagine or think yourself to be. You're the gatekeeper. You're the one that is supposed to say no to that thought and yes to this thought. I had this just popped in my head. Random things will just pop in, so I go with it sometimes. But this just popped in twice now. So I was doing one of these trainings one time, and we had a family here, friends of Erica's, and their 9-year-old daughter, Anna, was Anna Marie. She was here, and at the break, she came up to me, and she said, Miss Rhonda, I'm so sorry, but I got bored when you were teaching. So I just asked God to encounter me, and he showed me a picture, and I drew it for you, and I'd like you to have it. And so, it's okay. Her mother apologized later that she said she was bored. I said, that's okay. So anyway, I had a dream a few nights before, and in this dream, I was presented by an angel before this big, wide staircase, gold. It was gold railings and ivory steps, white, and it went straight up to the throne. And up at the top was Yeshua. And I said to this angel in the dream, how am I ever going to get up there? How am I going to do this? How will this happen? And I wake up all upset and whatever. Well, this little Anna Marie, 9 years old, was having a God encounter session all by herself at the table back there. And she sees a picture of this staircase. She draws it. I still have it. She drew the staircase. She drew the angel. She drew Yeshua at the top. And she says to me, and Yeshua told me to give you this picture. And he said to tell you, you don't have to worry about how you're going to get to the top. He's going to take you there. Telling you, these God encounter sessions can be supernatural. And it's all about how much we're willing to surrender and get out of the way and dare to believe that he's big enough and that he longs to and wants to encounter us, interact with us, speak to us, hold us, whatever it might be. But if it doesn't happen, it's because there's something in us that prevents him from coming close. I had this one lady I was facilitating, and she was just having a terrible time encountering. So I said, well, let me see if I can help. And so she says, okay, I'm walking down this. I said, what's your safe place? She said, the streets in New York City. And I'm like this Southern country Georgia girl, you know, and I said, like with people and cars honking and all that. Yeah, that's my safe place. I said, okay. I said, all right, where's Yeshua? Look around. He's everywhere all the time. So where is he? She said, I don't know. I said, well, look. She's looking. I see him. I said, where is he? She says, he's across the street on the top of the skyscraper. And he's looking down at me, waving. And I said, what's he doing up there? And she said, I don't know. I said, you want to ask him? So she yells up, what are you doing up there? And he yells down to her, you won't let me any closer. Yeah. So I just said, is that true? And she said, yeah, that's probably true. And I said, well, would you like to find out why you don't want him any closer? Is that something that you might find helpful in your life? And so we went on that, took care of those issues, And then she was able to invite him to come, and he came and walked through the streets of New York with her. Anyway, those were two freebies. So let's keep going. Page 6. Your mind and its imagination open and close the gate of your future. We just read that, Proverbs 23:7. What you open your mind to think about will eventually determine your actions. The opposite is true. What you close your imagination to will no longer be able to control you. All right, let's talk about some practical stuff, and then we'll get into this dianoia. Sounds like it's annoying, but it's not. That's the word imagination. But this isn't in your manual. This is a freebie, so if you want to take notes. You have four projectors that I've perceived through the years, and one screen. So if you could picture this as a screen, and you got a table right here with four projectors sitting there. And those projectors can project onto that one screen. Your screen is your imagination. That's your imagination. It's blank. It's empty. You're born with it blank and empty, except whatever Yahweh imprints on it. I believe he does imprint himself in infants. The four projectors that can have access to your imagination is, number one, you, your own self, your mind, will, and emotions. You can project onto that screen whatever you so desire. Yahweh, number two, can project onto that screen. The Trinity. And the third, the devil can project onto your screen. And the fourth, other people can project onto your screen. And you are the gatekeeper. You're the one that's supposed to turn on and off those projectors. Invite Yahweh, the Trinity, to project onto your screen. And that's what we do with a God encounter. We are inviting the Trinity to come and project himself, his presence, his words, his thoughts, his will onto the screen of our imagination. I find it so interesting. My very first encounter was a movie screen where he projected my past onto it. So let me ask this question. Why do you think Yahweh gave you an imagination? So he can meet you. Why else? So you could see what your natural eyes can't see, the unseen, invisible world. Those are perfect. What else? Yeah. So because we were made in his image, and the fact that he created us by imaging us, by nature, we're going to be image-bearing beings. Yep. Yep. How about this one? So you can imagine. He gave you an imagination so that you can imagine. Now, I'm telling you, especially in the church, I've had more resistance in the church than any unbeliever I've ever met to this, to the idea of giving Yahweh your imagination and allowing him to speak to you through it. All right, I'll share it. So I was in California one time years ago, and speaking church, we went out for lunch, and we're sitting outside at these long tables, and down at the far end of our table is this woman who is clearly in distress, heartbroken, and I could hardly eat for being aware of her. And finally, I couldn't take it anymore and excused myself from the group and walked down to the table and asked if I could sit down. And I said, I noticed your heart's hurting. And she said, how do you know that? I said, I know you look really, really, really heartbroken. And she said, I am. And she proceeded to tell me why. And it was so tragic. And I went on and just very gently encouraged her that I know someone who's able to heal broken hearts and able to put those kind of Humpty Dumpty broken pieces back together. I said, he did it for me, and I've seen him do it for hundreds of other people. Would you like to be introduced to him? And she said, well, who is it? And I said, his name is Jesus. And she said, oh, him. And I said, what do you know? What do you know about him? She said, oh, yeah, he's like major rule guy, and you got to do this, and you're never going to be good enough, so why bother? And I said, that's not the Jesus I know. I said, would you like to meet him? Just meet him and find out for yourself. How can I do that? I said, well, do you have an imagination? She said, oh, yeah. I said, well, he uses the imagination to talk to us, if you'll invite him to. And she said, well, what do I have to lose? You know, so I just real quick, I didn't do all the ABCs, which we'll learn about. I just real quick, Jesus, would you come and meet blah, blah, blah in her imagination? She wants to see you. So I just sat there and I said, picture just a place where you feel really safe, because it's important you feel safe. So, and I said, could you tell me what it looks like? So she tells me. I said, oh, I like that. And I said, now just say, Jesus, would you come and be with me? And she does. And I bet it wasn't 5 minutes. She's just crying and crying and crying, crying. And long story short, Jesus appears to her and tells her some secrets that only she and he would know, and touches her and heals her and tells her some specific things. And then when she's all done, she opens her eyes and tells me, and then she says, that's more real than anything I've ever heard. You know, she said, I've been an atheist. I'm no longer an atheist. So I've found unbelievers, you don't have to do near the teaching. I don't have to do all this, you know, and convince, you know, just, hey, you want to try? What have you got to lose? So, all righty. Your imagination can be a bridge to the spiritual realm. When I learned that, my whole life changed. When your imagination is pure, it becomes a bridge between the spiritual and the natural. Now, you can defile your imagination today. You can have it pure and clean, and then an hour from now, defile it yourself or have somebody else defile it. One time I opened up an email and somebody blasted me with some nastiness, and my imagination got defiled. It wasn't my fault. But I had to do something about it. You don't just ignore it. I'm not going to leave that in my mind, because I know that any image or words or thoughts that's in my mind, my brain, if I leave it there, my brain thinks I want to go this way, and it begins to grow and multiply that image. So I had to take care of it, and I had to apply the blood of Yeshua to it and command it to go and get out of my mind and do the big red X and put something godly in its place. So 2 Corinthians 4:18 says, while we look not at the things which are seen, the things which are seen are the earthly natural things, but we look at the things which are not seen, that's spiritual things, because the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. So we're being told by Paul here that it's real important that we don't focus the things that are temporary, the things that are going to burn up, the things that aren't going to matter. But we are to focus on the things that are going to matter. I have a question I've said for years in my life when I'm trying to, if maybe I can't hear the Lord clear and I'm just not sure, and should I, shouldn't I, what, you know, I don't know, Lord. And instead of doing the pros and cons, I do this. Lord, I used to say 100 years, but now I'm down to 10 years, I'm getting older. 10 years from now, will this matter? 20 years from now, will this matter? In other words, when I'm in eternity, will this thing right here matter? And if it does matter, boy, I'm gonna go towards it. If it's not gonna matter, I don't have the time left to focus on something that's not gonna matter for eternity. And I believe even if you're 16 or if you're 93, we don't have the time anymore to waste on things that aren't gonna matter for eternity. So 2 Corinthians 3:18 says, but we all with unveiled face, this is referring to Moses, are beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord and are being transformed into the same image from glory to glory. Now, Paul's saying that that's just a way of life. Is that your way of life? Are you beholding like in a mirror the glory of the Lord daily? If so, you're being transformed into his image, because it's in his presence that we're transformed. It's kind of like us parents, you know, when we had younger kids and we understood that whatever kids our kids hung out with, they would become like them. Remember that? And that's not always good. You know, we're really relieved when their best friends are their other believing friends. But when they're wild and doing stuff they shouldn't be doing, we get real nervous, because what we behold, we become like. And that's true in the kingdom. So I believe, my personal opinion is, it's really important what we're focusing our spiritual eyes on. Whatever you focus on, you will connect with. That's a brain truth. Whatever you focus on, you will connect with. And if you focus on the Lord, you're going to connect with him. It might not happen the first time. You know, we've got some of us have, I just looked down. Perfect timing. Some of us have things inside of us that are killing and stealing and destroying our Christ-likeness, right? I want to tell this story. I brought a visual aid for you because I know your brain likes to see pictures. Back when COVID was going around, about a year after it started, the farm was spared. And then Danny and I went on vacation to Florida with our kids and our grandkids. And while we're there, like the second day, and I get a phone call that one person on the farm just got diagnosed with COVID. And I'm like, uh-oh. Because we live in community here. That means we work together, we fellowship together, we do church together, we're together a lot. And I thought, uh-oh. So then the next day I got another phone call. Two more people had symptoms. That's three. And then the third day, uh-oh. Like, I forgot now how many. So we decided we need to get back to the farm. We get back. And by that time, everybody was down except Colleen and one other resident. Everybody else was down and out in bed, like just them. And we have goats and chickens and gardens at that point. Now we have cows and the horses. I forgot about the horses. We had horses then. So that's why we knew we needed to get back. And so I go in the greenhouse, because the person that was overseeing the greenhouse was sick with it. I go in the greenhouse and I see our, oh goodness, probably 30 tomato plants. And they look like they're dying. They're bad. They look bad. And the minute I see them, I go, oh no. And I know. I walk up and I know. If y'all, those of you that garden, you ever seen those tomato hornworms that look like they came out of the pit of hell? Demonic as they ever could be. Well, I look at this first plant and I see the damage, all the leaves, and it has that tomato hornworm just devours all the leaves, and it'll crawl to the next one and devour all the leaves, and all it does is eat and poop. That's it, all day, night, didn't sleep ever. And they just get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Well, I am like, oh, no, and I'm the only one. And so I get they creep me out. I don't like touching them. Toby was always helping me, and I'd call my grandson. He's back there helping make your coffee. Anyway, I'd go, caterpillar alert, and he'd come running, and he'd catch them for me and kill them because I can't stand them. Well, he wasn't there because everybody's sick, and so I'm there, and I have to get them. I know. Oh, yeah, yeah, I can feel it, just thinking. Get them off the thing, and I'm thinking, I can't kill them. There's going to be 50 of these things. So I get a jar, drop them in it, thinking I'll take them home to Danny. He can kill them. And so I can't, that you can't see them. They look like the leaf. You can't see these things. You think you could, but until they get ginormous. Anyway, so I can't see them. And I know looking at this plant, there's got to be a caterpillar, and I can't see it anywhere. And so I just have this, all of a sudden I have this prayer that pops in my spirit. And I said out loud, Yahweh, would you give me eyes to see what I can't see? I need your eyes right now, supernatural vision. I can't see what I need to see, but these things are killing these plants, and I need to see what it is. So as soon as I prayed that, I saw it. There it is. Oh, there it is, and I got it. And then I just kept for hours. I forgot how many caterpillars. It was over 100 that first day that I got. And that wasn't, I didn't even finish in a jar. Yeah. I thought maybe the chickens would eat them. They don't like them either. Uh-uh. Nope. Nope. They ran. Nope. I'm telling you, I think they come from the ground down. But so I go back the next day, and I get even more. And as I'm praying this, and I found out I couldn't see them. But when I'd say, give me eyes to see what I can't see, all of a sudden I'd see them. It was crazy. I was encouraged. Then I started, and Lord, while you're doing that, would you give me ears to hear what I can't hear? Or what I don't want to hear? Would you? And then I added to it, and Lord, would you give me a heart that's quick to obey what I see and what I hear? And I began to go through that greenhouse, just praying that all day. I mean, I find hundreds. I'm not kidding. So then I shared it with the farm, and boy, the Lord just used that, and He still does use that. We still pray that, and so. And then when I study the book of Revelation, Yeshua talks about that if you have eyes to see, ears to hear, there it is in scripture, and all with this caterpillarness. So this week, I've been so thrilled because we've had no tomato hornworms in the greenhouse because I found a trick. Two things. Pray and tell them this isn't their territory. And second, get one of those bug zappers and hang it so at night, because the moth is what lays the whatever for the caterpillars to grow. So last year we used the two bug zappers, and we didn't have one tomato hornworm. So this year, but we closed the greenhouse at night. This year we kept the greenhouse open because we've had crazy heat, right? But so I go in there just a few days ago, and I love to garden. I love my plants. I love my sheep. I love my people. So I'm in there loving on these tomato plants. So excited. They're looking great. I'm picking tomatoes. And I'm always, a shepherd always looks at the sheep. And I'm always looking at my sheep and my tomato plants or whatever I'm growing. So I'm looking at them. And all of a sudden, I get down one whole row. Everything's perfect. I come around the corner. I get up to the next one. And all of a sudden, I see the leaf chewed. I know what it is. It's a sign. And I said, okay, where are you? Where are you? Where are you? I can't find it. I can't find it. I go, oh. She'll give me eyes to see what I can't see. And I wasn't even a minute. Bingo, there it is, right in front of my face. So I got my, I still can't touch them. I got my scissors, cut the leaf off, limb off, dropped it in my jar. And think that's the only one. And just as I'm ready to move to the next tomato, I hear that voice say, what makes you think there's just one? Or back, and I find four more on that one plant. And then the Lord starts talking to me. He said, I want you to take this to the training. Because one of the things God encounter sessions do, if you will let him, if you'll allow him, is he shines his light inside of you. And those things that are preventing you from encountering him, they're like those tomato hornworms. And they're chewing and they're eating and they're devouring and they're hiding. Those tomato hornworms are hard to see. Here's my gift to y'all. And some of those are dead down there. They're just nasty. And if I had not listened to that voice that said, because Satan will try to tell you it's just one thing. Demons travel in packs almost always. And just like these guys, you find one, you can probably have some more. And so because the damage on that one plant was very little, I thought there was just one. You know, I've been gardening for 50-something years. I gardened with my mom when I was little. I loved it. So anyway, we have to stop and listen and ask him to show us what's devouring, what's killing, what's stealing the fruit. And do what it takes. I can't stand to touch them, so I just get some scissors and figure out a way. You just get it out of you. And then I get to the next plant, and everything looks good. And I'm, okay, that's probably it. Because I got my zappers running. I got confidence in my zappers. But I didn't think about the fact I'm leaving those doors open at night. I'm probably attracting the moths in there with the doors open. That dawned on me. Wait a minute. This probably might not be. Last year, we shut the door, so it worked. So anyway, two plants down, I find chewed leaves. If you have the symptoms, you might have a caterpillar. We're going to look at strongholds, and there's a list of things that might indicate that you have a stronghold. And if you have these particular things, you might have a caterpillar destroying the life of God inside of you. And so the prayer in the God encounter session, give me eyes to see, Lord, what I can't see or what I don't want to see, what I'm afraid to see. Give me ears to hear what I can't hear or what I don't want to hear or what I'm afraid to hear. Would you do it supernaturally? Remember, Yeshua, the last Adam, did what the first Adam couldn't do, and that was create a bride. And Yeshua, he died so that he could make us ready and prepare an eternal partner. If you don't like the word bride, use the word partner, because it's partnership. But it's not just business partnership. It's family partnership. And part of that preparing the bride is to get these things out of your life, and they hide. Strongholds are terrible because they're shrouded in deception, and you don't know you have them. Your husband or wife might know you have them. Your best friends probably know you have them, but you won't know you have them. And when they tell you you have them, you will probably tell them they don't know what they're talking about, because they're hidden, like these nasty things are hiding in those tomato leaves. Yeah, anybody want a closer look at these things? Well, you can do it later. They stick to you. That's the other thing about these things. They have suction cup feet, so they stick just like a demon will stick to you. Yeah, they eat the life that's in you that causes them to grow and mature. I do have holes poked in the top so they wouldn't suffocate, even though they're going to die. I just didn't want to be the one to die them, kill them. Danny's gonna take care of those. Yes. Do all caterpillars become butterflies? There's the question. These don't become butterflies. The moths. Yeah, moths. Yeah. I have a whole new visual for demons now. And the destruction. All right, let me present Isaiah 26:3 to you. It's one of my probably top 10 scriptures that I just love. Isaiah 26:3 says, I will keep him in perfect peace. That means shalom. Shalom is the original. This is not in your notebook yet. This is my freebie. I will keep him in perfect peace who fixes their imagination on me because he trusts in me. Isaiah 26:3. So some of your translations will say mind, who fixes their mind on me, but that word is the word that's used for the imaginary part of your mind. So let me ask you this. Anybody want shalom, shalom? That word is there twice. It's shalom, shalom. Perfect peace. It means everything is good and right and perfect in every way. That's what that word means. Anybody want that? Okay. He tells you here how to get it. Fix your imagination on him. But in order to fix your imagination on him, he says, because he trusts in me. So you got to trust him in order to see him. And Hebrews, what is it, 11, that says we are to believe that Yahweh is God and that he is a rewarder of those who trust him, seek him, trust him. Which one is it? Seek him. Yeah, who seek him. So it's important that we view Yahweh as a rewarder. That means, and Yeshua told us that. He said, hey, if you ask the Father for bread, he's not going to give you a stone. If you ask him for a egg, he's not going to give you a what? Serpent. Right. So it's important that we go into these encounters with the faith that Yahweh's good. And his desire is to reward us. His desire, he wants to be with you more than you want to be with him. And that has always been true from the beginning with Adam. So, again, if you have trouble connecting, don't beat yourself up. You don't have time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that. Not anymore. Time. Anybody notice the clock ticking and the things happening prophetically in the world that's in the Bible? I mean, we are on a fast track to the Lord's return. I don't know. I don't know when. We don't know when, but we can certainly know the season. And Yeshua told us that we better be watching for it. So you don't just sit back and just let it happen. He said, no, you watch for it. We don't know the day or the hour, but boy, we're going to know the season if we pay attention to Bible prophecy and we pay attention to what's happening in the world, especially around Israel. It's our time clock. So, and the whole Ezekiel 37 war, and I mean, it's just all going to play out in a minute. I don't literally mean in a minute, but soon. Whatever soon is. Yeshua said that he'd be back soon, and 2,000 years has gone by. So, all right. So, Yahweh, it's also important that we remember that Yahweh is omnipresent. That means He's everywhere all the time. That's what that means. He's omnipresent, past, present, future. I mean, that's wild to think. We can't grasp it. It'd give you a headache. I tried when I was younger. I remember trying to figure out, how can Yahweh right now be in the Garden of Eden and right now be at the marriage supper of the Lamb? Because he's outside of time. Headache. Anyway, there's so much we don't know, right? We think we know. It's our lack of awareness that shuts Yahweh out. Often we fail to hear him knocking on our door, which reminds me of the passage in Revelation where he says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any of you will get up and open the door," so we have our part. We got to get up, open the door. He says, "I will come in and I will sit and dine with you." Now, we've always mostly, often, let me rephrase that, often we use that as a salvation example. That passage is spoken to the church. It's not spoken to unbelievers. It's about the church getting up, get up, make some movement, walk to the door. Yeshua's the door. Open the door. Let him, invite him to come into you and dine with you, fellowship with you. You don't hear him say, "Let me come in so we can go out and work hard. Let me come in so we can have fellowship together." To a Jew, to invite someone in their home to eat with them wasn't like today as much. They were, if you got invited into their home, they were saying to you, "I want to be intimately acquainted with you." Yeshua was saying, "I want to be intimately acquainted with you. Will you let me in?" He wants to come in. He's knocking. He's knocking. But we got to, I remember one time standing doing dishes. Ugh, just flashback in my mind. And I was in a hurry, like I almost always am. And about halfway through or so, I feel the Lord calling me to pull away, to come be with him. And I was like, "Oh, Lord, I've only got a few more dishes, just a few more. Can I just finish the dishes?" So I did. I just finished the dishes. And I said, "Okay, I can come now." And I went in there. I couldn't find him anywhere. He wasn't. It was like he was taking a nap or something. And I went, "Oh, I missed his knock. I didn't get up and go and open the door. He was knocking." Who knows what he wanted to impart or just be with me. It really impacted me, as you can tell, even to this day. So, Yeshua, if you want to get to the Father, Yeshua said, "No man comes to the Father except through me." So Yeshua is the door. He's the way to the Father. Now, another freebie. Growing up the way I did, and I was raised in a church that taught God doesn't speak today. God doesn't heal today. The Holy Spirit baptism isn't for today. And it was just mostly the word, the word, the word, the word. And I loved it. I read, I studied, I've always loved studying. And so I didn't think much about it, except my experiences were different from what I'd hear in the pulpit, because Yahweh would come to me and he'd talk to me and I could feel him and I could sense him. But so I just learned. That's why my mom said, "Rhonda, you have such a vivid imagination." She didn't know, and I didn't know. But so I just learned to be quiet about it and not talk about these encounters. And so after I got married, Danny and I, a few years into it, we started realizing that maybe that wasn't true. He was raised Baptist, So he had some different, I was Church of Christ, very legalistic. And so we began to study, and after a year, we quit going to church just to try to get that out of us so we could see and hear clearly, and just determine that the Holy Spirit did still work today, and God did speak today, God does heal today. And I had polio when I was a year old, paralyzed on the right side. So while I was growing, my right leg didn't grow because it was paralyzed. So I was lopsided and walked like that. So anyway, we found a Spirit-filled Baptist church, and we went there, long story short, met with the pastor. And before we even, I had a bunch of questions I needed answers to. Before we could even start, he starts telling us this story of a, out of the blue, we sit down and, hi, how you doing? Hey, see that boot up there? That's from a man who had polio, and his one leg was longer than the other. And the Lord healed his leg, and it grew out, and that's his boot. He left it with me. And I'm sitting there going, well, I have one leg shorter than the other. I had polio, and I had, at this point, I didn't have faith for healing because I'd been taught it out of me. But after 15 months of being paralyzed, the Lord healed me when I was 2 and a half. But I had, at age 30, I had been diagnosed with post-polio syndrome, which there's no cure for it. You actually return back to the state you were originally in, paralyzed. So, and that was starting to happen. My leg was collapsing. It was getting paralyzed, but not permanently, and then it'd come back and all that. Well, this pastor didn't know this. So he tells me that story, and I'm like, I had polio, and my leg, he said, you did? He lit up like crazy. He leaned forward. He said, well, let's just see. And he says, put your legs out for me. So Danny's with me, and I put my legs out, and he goes, oh, you do. He said, can I pray for you? I'm going to pray for you. He hops up. I just was in the South, he's an elder. He's white hair. You do whatever white haired elders tell you in the South. So I'm like, okay, I'm not going to say anything different. So I do the ritual, close your eyes, bow your head, do the pose. And he puts his hand on my shoulder and starts praying. And I can't remember, just asking the Lord to heal me or something. I don't remember, but just simple prayer. And all of a sudden, with my eyes closed, I feel the bone in my right leg growing between my knee and my hip. Just feel the bone. And I opened my eyes, I looked down, and I said, I feel it. And Danny says, well, I see it. And we looked down, and my right leg, which used to be shorter, was now about 2 inches too long. And I went, oh no, this is bad. This is not good. And the pastor pats me on, he said, it's okay. Watch what God can do. And I remember his exact words. He said, Lord, would you put everything into perfect balance into Rhonda's life? And I watched and felt my right leg go, whoop, and it stopped even with my left leg. And so I jumped up out of that chair. I ran and grabbed the 90-year-old church secretary, grabbed her, about shook her bun off her head. Did you know God heals? God heals today. He just healed my leg. And I was so excited. Well, because I had polio, my big toe, the leaders in my big toe were too short. So my big toe stood up all the time. And the Lord didn't heal that. He just left it. And so he healed it 95%. So instead of it being straight up, it would be about like that. So I go home that day, and my two youngest sisters, Danny and I practically raised them. And my youngest sister came in from school, and before I could tell her anything, she looks down at my foot and she says, your toe. And I looked down and I said, oh yeah, it's not sticking straight up. She said, no, your toe. And I said, my leg. And so I told her what happened. But after that, the Lord said to me, he said, Rhonda, the first part of your life, it was all word and no spirit. You were out of balance. And he said, and I showed you what will happen if you're all spirit and no word. Your right leg was too long. And he said, and now I'm bringing everything into perfect balance in your life. And as you can see, I'm not crooked. I walk in perfect balance, his perfect balance. So as you're encountering the Lord, you don't just encounter the Lord's spirit. You got to have the word. Everything's got to be tested against the word, the written word. That is Yahweh's love letter to us. That isn't just some book of do's and don'ts and how not to and how to. And it is his love letter. He's revealing himself to us in that book, both Old and New Testament as well. Here's my, oh, bought me this 1 year as a memento of what it used to be like. That's how my shoes were terribly painful for me because of that. And this foot was shorter than the other one, and shoes, and it was a big challenge. But anyway, this is my reminder. So, as we seek to encounter him, remember Yeshua is the door, and Yeshua came to show us the Father. He said that out of his own mouth. I came to show you the Father. Then he says, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. So as you encounter Yeshua, remember, that's not the end of your journey. The Father is the one that's the end of the race. And Yeshua will take you there. He'll get you there. And as you see him, and if you're afraid of the Father because of the Father transference, just remember, Yeshua was possessed by the Father. He lived inside of him. Yeshua was fully man and fully God in a way that none of us can understand, but it's true. So these are some things that help, because encountering him requires trust on your part. So your life is boot camp. When you graduate from boot camp by dying or the Lord returning, whichever happens first, that's when your real life begins. This is our only opportunity we'll ever have to suffer. We get one time, one lifetime to suffer. And from this, the time we take our last breath, we never have an opportunity to suffer again. And Yeshua said that he learned obedience through the things he suffered. If he had to as a man, how much more suffering do you think you might need? So my goal is to walk right out of this earth life, right out of this world, with Yahweh beside me, around me, in me, and walk right in to the next life. I don't want to wait until I die to experience that kind of intimacy. I can't have it in its fullness, but I want to have as much as I can have of that experience, because I believe that's what he wants for each one of us. So the next time you suffer, remember, you only get this opportunity to suffer for Christ, and he suffered for us. So why wouldn't we want to suffer for him? I was in Taiwan January, when was it? A year ago? Year and a half ago? 2014. Anyway, I had been diagnosed with cancer, fighting cancer, and ended up, I went to a place in Cancun called Hope for Cancer, because I just believed it was the way the Lord wanted me to go, and ended up having a hysterectomy there. And the third day, I got COVID on top of that. And if you've ever had any abdominal surgery and you're coughing, the two don't go together. It's not fun. I was like in agony because I was coughing nonstop, and they were giving me cough medicine and it wasn't working and just bad. So I was in really bad pain this third night, and I have a secret place the Lord created for me, and it looks like it's in outer space, and it's this ginormous gold heart, and it's got all these keyholes all over it. And there's one keyhole that I fit in. I tried to fit in the others. I won't fit. There's only one door for me into Yahweh's heart. And I've been going there for years and years and years. But this time, as I'm laying there hurting, I'm like, oh, help me, Father, help me. And I'm instantly at that keyhole, like instantly. And inside it, in the past, there would only be like this white down nest. And that was the only thing in the room, little room, with candlelight, and I could hear the Father's heart beating. I love you. Every beat, he'd say, I love you. I love you. I love you. And I spent who knows how many hours there in my consecrated imagination. And so, but this time, when I go in that room, I see the nest, but right over here is a rocking chair, and I see my Heavenly Father with his white hair and his white beard, and as a man. And he had on a red and white plaid shirt rolled up to the elbows, real grandfatherly-like, and he's sitting in that rocking chair, and he's rocking, and there's a fireplace in front of him. And he turns and sees me in the doorway of the keyhole, and he, come, child, come. I've been waiting for you. And so I run in, and I'm me. I'm not a child. I'm me. And he reaches out, grabs me, and sit in his lap like I'm a child. And he rocks. And I said, Papa, I'm hurting so bad down there on the earth. Right now I'm not hurting, but down there I'm hurting. And he said, I know, child. I know. And I said, at one point I asked him, I said, why is there so much suffering on the earth? I just don't understand, because you're so good. Why is there so much suffering? And he said something like, I didn't create suffering. I'm not the one that introduced it to your planet. He said, but I do use it. And I use it mostly to draw my sons and daughters to myself. Because when you're suffering, I'm your only hope. But he said, but sadly, most won't come to me. Most don't come to me. So as you suffer, remember, Yahweh doesn't cause it. He didn't initiate it. He didn't introduce it to this planet. But he's used what Satan meant for evil, and he'll turn it for good if you'll let him. And use it to run to him, to hide yourself in him, to sit in his lap, to let him speak his life and truth to you. Because this world is your boot camp. My sister, my oldest sister's husband passed away a couple years ago, and I went to be with her. And as she was processing and we were walking, and she was just sharing how she and her husband became very wealthy, and they had anything they wanted, could go anywhere, do anything. And she just started saying, and what good is it? You know, she was just that reality. He died suddenly, And she was just talking about the world and how hard and life is and And as she was talking, the Lord says to me, your sister expected to find paradise on the earth, and no one will ever find paradise here. That's reserved for my kingdom. And so if you have this idea that life has to be great and good and not even perfect, but just really rich, and not even in money, but just if you have that idea that life should be it, that's reserved for another kingdom. In this world, you will have trouble, but have no fear. Yeshua said, for I've overcome the world. So we look and view this life with that expectation of what is to come. And you will one day experience that kind of life if you're a believer. Recently, the Lord invited me. He said, I want you to imagine a world without pain, without sin, without sorrow, without suffering, without cancer, without sickness, without COVID, without fear, without shame. Imagine a world without guilt. I want you to imagine that. And I said, Lord, I don't think I can. And he said, oh, but you will live that life one day, but it won't be in this life. It'll be the one to come. No Satan. He's locked up for 1,000 years. I am so looking forward to him getting his, what he deserves, and being put in his place, and like those caterpillars squished like a bug. Because he's just stolen way too much from us. But in the midst of it, Yahweh has blessed us. Choose life. I put before you today life and death. Choose life that you might live. All right, now let's look at this word imagination. Y'all awake? You need a coffee? Is that a yes? All right, let's take a coffee break. Dee, I know you're excited.